As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome in, everybody. Another 49ers live room. A good time for one. Been a lot of news the last couple days here to begin the offseason. 49ers have replaced their ex-defensive coordinator DeMeco Ryans with a new one, an experienced coach in Steve Wilks. And Brock Purdy has a surgery date set, February 22nd. It's going to be performed in Texas, Arlington, Texas, by the Rangers team physician, a baseball doctor who specializes in elbow reconstructions. Purdy not getting the elbow reconstruction. He's going to be expected back by training camp, which means he has opted for the internal brace technique, the more modern technique. It's the newer kid on the block. Nick Mullins was able to come back the following season after a late 2020 UCL injury with this technique. So Purdy against Trey Lance. Matt, by the way, Trey Lance was on Radio Row at the Super Bowl today with Rich Eisen talking about the competition coming up, talking about embracing a chance to compete with Brock Purdy. And I think that's how the 49ers are going to approach this, that Purdy, I think, has established a lead over Trey Lance with how well he played this year, obviously much better than anything that we've seen from Lance yet. But Lance is going to have this offseason now to, I think, reestablish himself. And then we're going to see if he does really well, how Purdy returns, if he does come back by training camp. And it just really makes for gripping television. The 49ers are interesting 365 days of the year.
Yeah, I think that the last time that Kyle Shanahan speaks in the late spring, which will be the June mini camp, let's say it's June, I don't know, 15 or 16, something in that vicinity, he's going to get asked, what is the quarterback plan for training camp? And it's going to be really interesting. And if it's a competition between Brock Purdy and Trey Lance, that obviously is very interesting, but it would be interesting to see how Shanahan sort of has constructed the offense, because under Trey Lance, it's a little bit different than the offense under Brock Purdy. You know, we saw them kind of shift when Lance got hurt in week two, and they went from Lance to Garoppolo, and it wasn't as run centric as the offense was under Lance. And I don't know, to me, the 49ers should sort of relieve that issue by just having Lance run the standard offense in the spring. I mean, I think that would be good for Lance and his development. If they do a two quarterback thing, to have them both kind of running the same offense. That's all going to be really interesting stuff. I think I feel like the timing is going to be fuzzier than what we're getting. You know, they've been saying 6 months to return to full practice. Well, 6 months from February 22 is August 22, which is usually around the last or second to the last preseason game. So that remains to be seen. I've heard that they'll have a more precise idea of it once that surgery is completed on the 22nd. But you're right. It's all kind of compelling stuff heading into the offseason.
And exactly. Anytime you're dealing with six-month timetables, you're not pinpointing something to the exact week. You know, like if it's a 4 to 6 week injury, then yes, but everybody wants to know the exact day and the exact week. Well, 6 months is about as ballpark as it gets, right? So it's going to have to, Purdy's actually going to have to go under the knife. We're going to have to see how the initial stages of rehab go. We'll probably get the best clue as to when he might be cleared to fully practice based on when he actually starts throwing, right? Purdy has said that this particular technique that the 49ers are using, he outlines that he returns throwing in about 3 months. So that's presumably going to happen at some point in May. And if it happens in earlier May, well, then I think he'd be on track to return for training camp at the start of it. If it happens in later May, well, maybe not, right? So we'll just have to keep on evaluating the checkpoints on the way with Brock Purdy. But, you know, I think you bring up a great point with the different offenses for Lance and Brock Purdy. And I think the ultimate goal for Kyle Shanahan has been for Trey Lance to be able to run the standard 49ers offense, but then enhance it with his running ability, right? I think that Lance has been so raw so far in the action that we've seen him at an NFL level that Shanahan has kind of had to put the cart in front of the horse, and he's had to accentuate Lance's running ability more than he's wanted to, because Lance hasn't really been ready to deliver as efficiently and as precisely in the passing game as has been needed. The hope is that, you know, with more mental reps, and Trey Lance has had plenty of those at the Super Bowl today with Rich Eisen, he talked about being in charge of charting blitzes and helping Brock Purdy and Jimmy Garoppolo, but he helped Purdy more because Purdy was a rookie and Garoppolo's a veteran with pressures. You hope that over time, Brock Purdy has been able to conceptualize the NFL game, NFL game speed better. And you'd hope that once he does start getting more reps under his belt this offseason, he'll be able to better handle that pass game situation to the point where Shanahan can run, comfortably run, the same offense that he's run for his other quarterbacks. Trey Lance has just been exceptionally raw, right?
Yeah, for sure. It's reps, reps, reps for Trey Lance. You know, Brock Purdy came into the NFL with almost five times the number of college reps that Lance did. And I think that was absolutely apparent when he got his chance. And so, you know, obviously having two healthy quarterbacks all off season is ideal, but this scenario, if it holds true, if Purdy is 100% for the start of training camp, this scenario, one in which Trey Lance gets the lion's share of the snaps in the spring, I think is pretty good. I mean, all things considered, because he's the one that needs the reps the most. David, there was other news regarding the other side of the ball. The 49ers hired a defensive coordinator, Steve Wilks, who got really high marks in Carolina. We all saw, and a lot of 49ers fans saw, the Panthers at their absolute low point, week five. I mean, they were booed off the field. The stadium was full of 49ers fans by the end of the game. It was a blowout. That franchise was as low as any in the NFL, and Matt Rhule was fired. Steve Wilks came in, and he did okay. I mean, this was with a team that traded its best asset, Christian McCaffrey, to the 49ers, and they still went, 6-6 down the stretch, to the point where Wilks was a legitimate permanent head coaching candidate there. He didn't get the job. Frank Reich did, and he becomes the 49ers defensive coordinator. The top criterion for Kyle Shanahan was basically don't change anything. And from what I hear, there's not going to be a lot of turnover on Shanahan's staff. That's still being sorted out, but nobody is sort of bracing for another sea change, especially on the defensive side. There might be a couple of assistants that go with D'Amico Ryans to Houston, but Wilks is coming in. He might bring a couple of guys with him, but it's essentially going to be the same system and mostly the same assistants running that defense. So there's more continuity there. I know that was paramount for Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah, and it was interesting to me. You reported it yesterday that Chris Kocurek was part of the interview process for Steve Wilks, and Steve Wilks has a DB background. I mean, this is a guy that started as a player, as a defensive back, and then as a defensive backs coach once he moved to that side of the game. So the 49ers have brought in DC, who's going to be a specialist when it comes to working with the secondary. Their prior defensive coordinator, Johnny Holland, was a specialist when it came to working with the linebackers. But D'Amico Ryans was a specialist when it came to working with the linebackers because he was co-coach with Johnny Holland at that linebacker level. And now you have a guy who's going to be focused on the back end while Chris Kocurek, the defensive line coach, I think is going to have free reign to keep the wide nine, to maintain that continuity along the defensive front. And as you said, that's exactly the way that the 49ers want this, because they love the work that Chris Kocurek has done. They also, are embracing a philosophical shift on the defensive side of the ball. This was a team that was squarely rush over coverage for 2019, and then they planned to be that way in 2020. They were that way even in 2021, but we started to see a shift, and then we really saw the shift this past season to where they are pouring a lot of resources into the defensive backfield. Maybe it's because they saw 2021 and that record amount of defensive pass interference penalties killed them. But this past year, Matt, the 49ers pass rush, the numbers, even the advanced ones, the sack one, the pressure numbers, those all fell the middle of the pack. This was not an elite pass rush by any stretch of the imagination. Yet the 49ers still led the NFL in interceptions. That was the first time that they had done that under Kyle Shanahan. They never came close to that in years prior. So more, better pass defense this past year with a worse pass rush. I'd have to say that this is a balanced unit now. And, I think they obviously want the pass rush to step back up closer to levels that it was at before. Full confidence that if Chris Kocurek gets the right players opposite Nick Bosa, the right players at defensive tackle, that can happen. But by hiring Steve Wilks, I think they're continuing to embrace the fact that they're leaning more and more on the coverage aspect of their defense.
Yeah, for sure. And that's really going to be the question mark to me defensively this offseason, is how do they get that pass rush? Because I think the secondary is going to be good. It could lose Jimmy Ward, and that would be significant just given who he is and how long he's been here. But mainly it's going to stay the same with Charvarius Ward on one side. At the very least, it'll be D'Amador Lenore. Maybe Emmanuel Mosley is back and at full health at the start of the season, and he's manning that other spot. But it's a solid secondary, and obviously it's a solid linebacker core. And obviously you've got one fantastic edge rusher on that defensive line. But I would think that a defensive line that has Nick Bosa, the NFL sack king, and likely defensive player of the year on it, wants a little bit more production pressure-wise from the entire line. What was it, 44 sacks? Which is a fine number, but it's not a huge number. And I think that should be the aspiration. So the question becomes, how do the 49ers sort of build back, or at least build half of that defensive line, just to get some more production out of it? And there's some interesting guys in free agency. Yannick Ngakoue kind of jumps out to me just because he's sort of that speed rusher, very much in the same mold that Dee Ford was. You might criticize him as a one-trick pony, but that's a hell of a trick he's pulling off there. I don't know, Marcus Davenport is another one. Remember, Dee Ford came to the 49ers via a trade, so the 49ers, I think, will look into a lot of different ways to get better in that regard. But to me, that's the defensively, that's Steve Wilks' kind of number one task, is to figure out, let's say that they need to add five guys to that defensive line, either through free agency or the draft. And some of them could be guys that were with the 49ers this past season. Charles Omenihu jumps out. But they need to find the right formula, and I'm not sure they had the exact right formula in 2022.
Well, you know what I think they're really missing was a quality interior pass rusher. In 2019, they had DeForest Buckner and DJ Jones. That was before Jones turned into the force that he would be later in his 49ers career. But they had Jones and Eric Armstead in 2021. That was really big for the inside. This past season, you lost Jones. They obviously no longer had DeForest Buckner, but Armstead missed a large swath of the season. And if you look at the efficiency or lack thereof, pass rushing wise on this defensive line, I made a chart the other day. And in my charts, there's blue means above average, red means below average. The interior line was all red except for Eric Armstead, who was just a little bit above average, but obviously he missed a lot of the season. So they were a below average defensive tackle unit when it came to rushing the passer. And I think that really showed up. And I think that that extends out to the edges, because if those guys on the interior are commanding more double teams, wreaking more havoc, that's what's going to really free up those edge guys in the wide nine to use the extra spacing that the alignment provides. And the metrics of the edge guys, you know, Bosa was obviously awesome, but the other guys weren't terrible. Amenihu, I think, ranked 19th out of edge rushers in pass rush productivity. So, it was something that the 49ers could work with. Obviously, back when they had D Ford, they had two top 10 guys when Ford was healthy between Bosa and Ford. And that's something that the Eagles had this year with Hassan Reddick and Josh Sweat. So if you want to be elite, yes, you need two top 10 edge rushers. But I think first and foremost, this is about grabbing somebody on the inside that can really help out those edge rushers. The 49ers defensive line, for the first time in a while, we can say they need help at multiple spots.
Yeah, it's going to be it'll be interesting because, this has been a priority for John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan and obviously Chris Kocurek. And they pick out the right guy. So, Steve Wilks is going to have some room, I think, some resources to have to fix that line. But to me, that's the big off-season task on that side of the ball. They could stand to use probably another defensive back. They got 11 picks in the draft right now. I doubt that they're going to end up with 11 at the end of the day, but there's a lot of ways that this team could go sort of bulk up that roster.
Well, we talk about bulking up the roster. I want to flip it to the other side of the ball, to the offensive line, because we're about to watch the Super Bowl here on Sunday. And I think, after studying this season, watching both of the two competitors in the Super Bowl play the 49ers, I think that these are the two best offensive lines in football, squaring off. And the 49ers saw that firsthand against the Eagles just about a week and a half ago. They had trouble generating pressure against Jalen Hurts because the Eagles up front were so strong. And the 49ers had a lot of trouble against the Chiefs offensive line, which by some of those ESPN metrics is by far the best pass blocking offensive line in football. I don't think it's a coincidence, Matt, that the two very best offensive lines in football are squaring off in the Super Bowl. I think that position is so important, especially in this modern pass happy game. We talk about the 49ers needing to bolster their defense with some acquisitions this offseason. Well, that offensive line that deserves and needs a lot of attention as well, because right now, just looking at it plainly, you have pending free agents at center and at right tackle. Jake Brendel and Mike McGlinchey are both coming off of good seasons, and the 49ers are going to have to find a way to take care of those two positions, whether it be by re-signing those guys or finding some kind of mix and match that is a different path. But whatever they do better work, and I think it better improve the offensive line, because that's what's going to be necessary for the 49ers to take the next step.
Yeah, tackle is going to be interesting because tackle is a big ticket item. Usually teams that have a top 15 pick, that's where they get their tackles. That's what the 49ers did in 2018 with Mike McGlinchey. I think he was taken, what was he, ninth overall that draft. They're not easy to get. So if you're losing Mike McGlinchey, I would think that the 49ers plan is to insert either Colton McKivitz or Jalen Moore in that spot. And I know McGlinchey gets a lot of grief from fans. He's led the team in quarterback pressures allowed in three of the 5 years he's been there. But I just wonder whether if you're going to go with somebody else, a backup, somebody who was a backup this past season, whether people are going to miss McGlinchey when he's gone. So he's a free agent. Jake Brendel's a free agent, and Daniel Brunskill's a free agent. I mean, to me, Brendel is the one that they're going to try the hardest to keep a hold of. I thought that his season compared very well to Alex Mack's, and Mack made the Pro Bowl in 2021. You know, he wasn't as good a run blocker. He's not as big and as strong as Mack was. But, you know, the statistics, at least what you can see, were very similar. So, I mean, it seems like that Kyle Shanahan would want to hold on to that anchor on his line and maybe let the other two guys go. You've got Nick Sakel coming in. He could potentially replace Brunskill as far as being a backup guard and a backup center. Like I said, McKivitz and Jalen Moore could be the next guy to start at right tackle. But you're right. I mean, you look at the two teams that really throttled the 49ers this year, and I know that there were some circumstances in the Eagles game that affected it dramatically, but the two teams with really good offensive lines, really good interior offensive lines, really moving Javon Kinlaw out of the way, clearing some space, et cetera, those were the ones that gave the 49ers the biggest fits.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And on the other side of the ball, the 49ers finished the season without a single healthy quarterback. And QB injuries have been absurdly common for this team over the past 4 years. And, you know, we could sit here and talk about play calling and superstition and luck and all things. Really, the only thing in football that you can reasonably adjust, because the play calling arguments, I think, are really out of touch with the realities of what play callers and the challenges the teams have to face. I mean, people complain about Tyler Kroft trying to block Hassan Reddick. That's a play that the 49ers actually used to great success a lot of the time. Most of the NFL has tight ends blocking edge rushers when they take play fake shots downfield. I think what you have to look at these injuries on the aggregate and say the one way that you can reduce QB injury rate, or at least increase your chances of reducing QB injury rate, is to just set up as good of a blocking situation as possible. The better the offensive line, the better chance you have of keeping your quarterbacks healthy. I think in general, that's the only like actual tangible thing you can do aside from trying to sign quarterbacks who don't have long injury histories, right? So, and Brock Purdy didn't have a long injury history, by the way, when they drafted him. Trey Lance didn't either. Jimmy Garoppolo got hurt once, right? Maybe twice with New England. But still, you don't really know until they play for a prolonged period with your team. And I think that it's best to not find out if a guy's going to get hurt a lot. And the best way to do that is to shield him from contact as much as possible with that offensive line. So just for the very simplest reason, I think that, that's a position group that is worthy of extra investment for the 49ers this offseason, Matt, because we're coming off of a historically ugly finish for this team as far as not having any quarterbacks healthy at the end of it.
Carlos A. has a question sort of along these lines. He asks, what are the chances of the 49ers upgrade TE2 position, tight end 2 position? It seems like we've been waiting for this to happen for a long time now. And the 49ers discuss it, but they never really do it. So what is it? We've got George Kittle is under contract. Charlie Warner is under contract for the next season, but Croft and Dwelly are both unrestricted free agents. So, either bring those two guys back or bring in at least, for the offseason roster, they'll probably have 6 tight ends. But as far as the regular season roster, we're talking about 2 spots are open. So, yeah, I absolutely think that they could and should bring in that tight end too. Croft is going to go down as the GOAT in the NFC Championship game. But actually, he was a pretty strong blocker, especially run blocker throughout the season. Certainly was the next best guy after Kittle at that position. So maybe he comes back. I don't know. They get a lot of bang for their buck with Dwelly. But I agree. I mean, they're sitting on how many third-round picks do they have right now, David? 3?
They have 3, but they don't pick until then.
But I wonder whether they can't kind of pool together some of those picks, some of their 11 picks, and go up a little higher, maybe earlier in the third round, and get a top tight end, one of the top tight ends. They won't get the top tight end, but get somebody who can really – not only block, but also be a threat to catch the ball, a little bit more dual threat than anybody else aside from Kittle that's on the team right now.
Yeah. I mean, and that's been a dream of Kyle Shanahan's. It's just the limitations of free agency and the draft and salary cap have prevented the 49ers from doing that. But we remember in 2020, they took a flyer on Jordan Reed, who definitely showed the ability to be what the 49ers wanted, but he was one of those players that got hurt a lot, and he got hurt for the 49ers, and George Kittle was also hurt for a large part of that season. So I think there was only one game, maybe there were two, where they got both of those guys, Kittle and Reed, on the field at the same time in 2020. So that dream was dashed, but that was the vision. Kyle Shanahan even talked about it when they did pick up Jordan Reed. And it was a low-cost signing. It was an injury flyer, so it didn't hurt them when it didn't pan out. But we do know where Kyle Shanahan's mind is. He would love that second tight end. He would love – I mean, Kyle Shanahan wants adaptable players. So he has Kyle Juszczyk line up at tight end. He's got some of his receivers line up there in more of an end-line spot because he wants that positionless skill position dynamic, right? He wants guys who can threaten to block but also go out for a pass pattern. And then the defense doesn't know what's coming at the line of scrimmage, and that helps create mismatches downfield. How about we hop over to some more questions, Matt? I personally can't see any questions coming through right now, so thanks for manning the ship on the question front.
Yeah, we got one from Matt H., and he asks, what's the better move, grabbing a free agent edge rusher or trying to draft one in the 3rd, 5th round? Well, if it's the 5th round, I'd say that's the best move because chances are the guy's going to turn into an all-pro at some point. Their luck in the 5th round has been outstanding. But, we saw from Drake Jackson that even, a late 2nd rounder, I'm not sure you can lean on that rookie all season. You saw him sort of fade at the end of the year, I think. He's in a great position to make a big leap, and we should have discussed him as far as that edge position. He's certainly in the mix, and the 49ers are hoping that he makes a big leap in his second year, and that's usually when guys do exactly that. And he seems to have all the tools to be a future starter at that spot. He's not a one-trick pony. I think he's got both kind of innate quickness. He's got just a insane flexibility, something that Nick Bosa just works so hard to get. It comes naturally for Drake Jackson. And he also has size. And the question is whether he can kind of focus and hone and train and just be really consistent because he seems to have a really nice foundation for exactly what the 49ers need at that other spot.
Yeah, he had 3 sacks over the first 6 games of this season, and he was also tied for the NFL lead with other defensive linemen with pass breakups in the line of scrimmage, pass deflections. So he's obviously doing something right over the first half of the season. I think it's a simple explanation. I think that this was a 20-game season. That's really long. That's a marathon. Drake Jackson had previously only played in an 11-game season once at USC. That was his maximum length of season. So it's tough for these guys. They have to rewire themselves in a way to be able to withstand the rigor and the marathon of these seasons. And not just, you know, mentally. I think that you have to go through that grind physically at least once, feel how it is to be worn down, so your body understands what it's going to take to be ready for that. So, you know, and zooming out, larger point to answer the question, it seems to me that, yeah, you can find a lot of your gems, guys that can become Pro Bowlers, all pros, instant impact kind of guys at other positions a little bit later in the draft, but at the really the positions that demand the most physicality, and that's defensive line and offensive line, I have to do some kind of study on this, but I feel that the trenches draft positioning is definitely more correlated to actual NFL on-field success than elsewhere. Like, I mean, it's really hard to pick an edge rusher in the 5th round and expect him, especially in his first year, to be physically ready to beat NFL offensive tackles consistently. Yeah. To me, it seems that it's those marquee picks that really do work out with edge rushers, right?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And those later round picks, you're usually seeing teams use on DBs and wide receivers. Although, I mean, George Kittle was a 5th rounder. I mean, there's all sorts of exceptions to that rule, but I think that generally holds true.
Yeah, so I think that there's a reason why it's hard to stock up on edge rushers, and it's because it's a premium position. It is the antidote to a great quarterback, right? Because if you can get to the QB in less than 2.5 seconds consistently, you can shut down an opposing pass game. You can make the Chiefs look like they looked against the Buccaneers in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. They only scored 9 points, kept Patrick Mahomes out of the end zone. So it is a premium position that takes big time capital to secure. And the 49ers, it's, you know, their investment in it has paid off over the years, but you could see how pricey and risky that investment can be. When D Ford was healthy, and it wasn't for very long that he was healthy, their pass rush was the best one in the league because he was there paired opposite Nick Bosa. But they gave D Ford a lot of money and they traded a 2nd round pick to Kansas City for him. And when D Ford ended up not being healthy, that hurt the 49ers, and they're still paying over $8 million this year on the books and dead money hit for D Ford. Yeah.
Don't tell the fan base that. That's not great.
Yeah. So yeah, he's still pricey for the 49ers right now. And that, you know, it goes to show you though, that they really were starved for an edge rush in that 2019 offseason.
Yeah.
And I mean, that whole thing is, I think it's some pretty complex stuff. That 2019 team was excellent. That pass rush roared its way to the Super Bowl, thanks in large part to D Ford was there. The one massive disappointment for the 49ers is they didn't finish the job against Kansas City. But gosh, if they could just hold on, like one or two more things break their way in the 4th quarter of that game, people are looking at that D Ford acquisition a lot differently, right? They don't care how much dead money there'd be if they would finish up that Super Bowl. So, he was a big part of the 49ers formula when he was healthy. Problem was that he wasn't healthy enough, but it underscores the need. It underscored both the need and the difficulty of stocking up that defensive line in a way that makes a true difference in the NFL.
No, I totally agree. Here's one from Nate W. He asks, what might be the 49ers plan if Jimmy Wand, I think he probably means Jimmy Ward,
probably
leaves in free agency. Yeah, Nate managed to misspell both Jimmy and Ward in this one, but that's okay, Nate. I understand what you're saying. So, David, what do you think happens with that secondary if Ward, say, goes to Houston or to the New York Jets or to the Miami Dolphins?
Well, let's use this as a chance to underscore how underrated Tashaun Gibson was last season. Gibson led all NFL safeties in passer rating allowed, 53.0, number one in the whole league, And he was number two in missed tackle rate of NFL safeties. So in both phases of the game, Gibson was excellent for the 49ers. That, you know, that's just good background because we're also not sure if the 49ers are going to be able to retain Gibson. It seems that he's thinking about retiring. He's on the fence there because he was 32 this past year. But if Gibson does return because he's felt the fountain of youth playing next to Talanoa Hufanga, he has said that, and obviously he posted an excellent year. If he does return, well then, not returning Jimmy Ward would not hurt nearly as bad because Gibson played so well that Ward moved to nickelback, and Ward improved over the course of the year in nickelback. But theoretically, if the 49ers can re-sign Emmanuel Mosley, if they, you know, can get some kind of bounce back from Ambry Thomas for some cornerback depth, and if they can continue this ascent from D'Amato Lenore and Samuel Womack too, they got his feet wet a little bit last year. They can find a body for perhaps Lenore to move inside to nickelback and man the role that Jimmy Ward did last year. But that's all contingent, I think, on somebody taking Tashawn Gibson's spot. And hopefully for the 49ers' sake, that's Tashawn Gibson. Hopefully he can stay for them. And that would make the replenishment process a lot easier on the back end if Ward indeed does not return.
Yeah, Gibson, 32 years old. Only Janoris Jenkins at 34 was older on that defense by the end of the season. And Gibson played more snaps than anybody else on defense. So his body definitely held up. You know, you can't kind of speak for a guy, but he seemed, seemed like he was okay throughout the year. So, yeah, hopefully he does come back. But I agree with you. If Ward were to go, you need to figure out the free safety. And then I think it's either Lenore or Womack who kind of step in as the nickelback. A couple of questions about Kalia Davis. We'll go with Jeffrey M's question. Do the 49ers envision Kalia Davis to fill in for that DJ Jones role, stout run stuffer? Or, I guess that's the question. You know, what kind of player is Kalia Davis? How do the 49ers envision him functioning on that defensive line?
Every single time that somebody on the staff or in the front office mentions Kalia Davis, they also mention DJ Jones. That was the comp. And, you know, Kalia Davis is a special kind of player in that he was a stack inside linebacker at the college level that moved to defensive tackle. And that is something that Chris Kocurek told me he has never worked with before. And that's crazy. Inside linebacker moving to defensive tackle. Defensive tackle is known as the most immobile position on the field, typically, right? That's the position where you're okay with a little extra bulk just so the guy is a fire hydrant, so you can't really move him, so you could eat up some double teams, could anchor there, you know, against some powerful interior blocks. But to gain that kind of strength, you're okay with sacrificing explosiveness. Well, Kalia Davis comes from the most explosive position in the front seven. That's inside linebacker. That's where you need sideline to sideline speed. He started his college career at Central Florida at that stack linebacker spot. And then they said, you know, this guy can really move, but he's got that stocky build. He's got that low center of gravity. We think he could take on guards. We think he could take on centers. We think he could take on lead blocks. They're right there in the middle of that defense. So they switched him to defensive tackle. Now, here's the one scary thing, and I don't know, I'm just speculating right now, and everybody's just going to be speculating until we see Kalia Davis take an NFL field and establish that he can deliver a prolonged career. Hopefully it's not the reason why he tore his ACL, right? Because this guy is he's so explosive. But you combine that with a size increase to play defensive tackle, that is when like ligament tears can happen because there's a lot of strain on the ligament. So he tore his ACL his final year at college, comes to the 49ers. They're rehabbing him the entire first year, but he impressed the hell out of them toward the end of the year when he joined them at practice. And they're talking about him being a DJ Jones type, which is a stocky dude who's also really explosive. So if that knee can hold up for Kalia Davis, They do think they have a player cut from that same cloth. And this is what we talked about at the top of the show, Matt. The 49ers really need that. They were deficient in terms of interior pass rush production this past year. Javon Kinlaw wasn't giving them what they needed. Kevin Givens wasn't giving them what they needed. Givens a better run stopper than a pass rusher. Armstead was, but Armstead was also hurt. So they need more from the interior pass rush, and the hope is that Kalia Davis' skill set can bring some of that next season.
I talked to Davis briefly during that window where he was practicing. And, you know, he hadn't, those were his first practices of the year. I think they were occurring in late December there. And he was really pleased with how he was doing, both his rehab, and he felt like he had started to kind of turn a corner. The bottom line being, he felt like he was heading into the off season in a really good spot. And, you know, the longer I cover the NFL, the more I realize that's such an important thing. Like, guys that go into the off season nursing injuries, having to recover from injuries, you know, they just don't get as good a jump on the year as other guys. I mean, look at Brandon Ayuk. I think he's just a fantastic example of this. He went into the 2022 off season like a man on a mission. I mean, he was focused, he was dedicated, and he parlayed that into the best season of his career. Debo Samuel did the same thing the year prior. George Kittle just the other day was talking about, this is the first time since 2019 that he doesn't have to begin the offseason rehabbing and doing this and that. I mean, yeah, you can certainly have a good year following an offseason of rehab, and I'm sure the 49ers are hoping Brock Purdy has exactly that. But for some of these, especially the skill position players, you know, DJ Jones is another example. I mean, he went into that final year with the 49ers, you know, a contract year. He was super focused, and it showed with how he played, his stamina, his strength, all that stuff. So my point is that I think that Khalil Davis is in a really good position. Obviously, he redshirted his rookie year, but that seems to be entirely behind him, and I think he's going to have a really good start to the offseason. Malik, a frequent question asker, thank you, Malik, asks, is Gold coming back? Is Robbie Gold coming back? What do you think, David, about the prospect of a 40-year-old kicker returning on what's going to be a top-of-the-market deal?
Well, listen, he's the best kicker in NFL playoff history. He's 29 out of 29 of field goals. He hasn't missed yet in the playoffs. That included this season. Nobody else has done that. Justin Tucker hasn't done that. If you can get him back for $5 million a year, I think his cap hit was 5.5 this past season, and you consider yourself a true contender if you're the 49ers, I think you have to do it. He's still absolutely clutch in the moments that matter most. I know he missed against the Raiders, but that wasn't one of the moments that mattered most. The 49ers ended up winning that game anyway. He ended up actually winning that game for them with the kick anyway at the end. So that playoff number, that's hard to run from. That's who are you going to get to replace him? And then how much would you regret it if you got some mediocre kicker, some rookie, I don't know, who screwed you over in the playoffs next year? And you did all the work to get back to the playoffs, and your roster was even healthier than this year, and it was ready to go, and then you lose to the Eagles 29-28 because of a missed field goal at the end by somebody not named Robbie Gold. I mean, I just don't think that the 49ers can live with that chance. Now, if Robbie doesn't want to come back to the 49ers, if he would rather be closer to his family in Chicago and, you know, would demand $10 million a year or something to stay with the 49ers, that's that. But as we know, he wants to make the Hall of Fame and he wants to win a Super Bowl. And to me, like, his best chance of padding that Hall of Fame resume and trying to get that Super Bowl ring is with the 49ers. So I think it makes sense for him to be amenable to an affordable deal with the 49ers, something around that $5 million range again. And it makes too much sense for the 49ers to keep him. He has not shown any signs of decline as far as field goal kicking yet.
Yeah, I agree with you. 2 years ago, the 49ers were in this exact same predicament, and they decided to pay him because they said to themselves, you know, we expect you to be playing big games in January and February, and we want a veteran kicker that we think is going to nail those consequential kicks. Nothing's really changed with either party. The 49ers still are in that position, and Gold is still kicking in those high pressure kicks. So I think it'll resolve itself. It's going to be all sorts of, you know, this and that, just like there was a couple of years ago. The offseason is full of that kind of stuff. Deebo Samuel springs to mind, but I think that a deal gets done at some point. Joseph W. asks, what do you think are the chances that we see the Niners over here in London next season versus the Jags, presumably? Hearing any?
Very high.
Yeah. I know that Jed York would love it. Jed York is a, I was going to say majority, but I don't think he's majority yet, but has a huge share in Leeds United. And I think Jed York would love a week that includes a Leeds United game and a 49ers game very close to each other. And you would have the 49ers players showing up at the Leeds United Stadium and vice versa. So there'd be some cross-promotional stuff. And that's what big-time businessmen think about. So I know he's all for it. And they do play the Jaguars, who, of course, play regularly in London.
And I'm sure that the NFL schedule makers will be notified of that business interest from the 49ers. So I think that's something that's going to happen. I don't know. I don't have any word that it's going to happen, but just knowing how the league works, knowing that the 49ers are one of the prized franchises of the league will recognize they have that investment in London, and the league wants to grow in Europe. What better way to grow than to, you know, help support a partnership between an NFL team and a soccer team over there in the UK. So I think 49ers Jaguars over there next season is going to be something that will happen. You cover that last game over there that they played in 2012, Matt. It was 49ers Jaguars, right, in 2012.
Yeah, I covered that game, and they played the Broncos. I can't remember what year it was. It was Mike Singletary year, so it must have been 2007 or 2008, and they won both of those games. So London has been good to them. It's a lot of travel, and they get the bye week right after that. So we would know exactly when the bye would be if they did get a London game.
Cool.
Let's go with one more. Joseph B. this time, not Joseph D., but Joseph B. Will Al Shire stay with the team? What do you think, David?
I don't think so. I think that'd be a total luxury pickup or retention. The 49ers are up against it with the cap. I mentioned the dead money that they're still owed to D Ford this year, but they've got about $225 million in liabilities right now. Their adjusted cap is only about $236 million after you include carryover and everything. And they only have 46 players under contract. So, that you can do that math easily. They have to fill up a bunch more spots with only $11 million. Now, they can free up some space with, for example, Nick Bosa currently has a cap hit of nearly $18 million. That's actually going to go down when he signs his extension because it won't be the fifth-year option price. They could spread it out over future years. They could take somebody like Christian McCaffrey, that was a $12 million cap hit, and lower that down to $5 or $6 million with a restructure that I think would make a lot of sense. So you could open up spots and space here and there. But as we know, we saw this in 2020, you want to enter a year with a buffer of at least $5 million. Otherwise, you're going to be really struggling throughout the course of the year to sign guys when guys get hurt. And that was a really big problem in 2020. Plus, before then, they have to sign there's a lot of positions that are up for unrestricted free agency. Right tackle with McGlinchey, there's no money from that accounted on the books right now. So whatever you do at right tackle is going to cost you some money unless you actually do decide to go to Colton McKivitz. And even McKivitz is going to cost something because I don't think he right now is technically under contract for next year. I think he's going to be, is he going to be a restricted free agent? Even if he's unrestricted, you'd probably get him back for relatively cheap. But still, this is all stuff that you've got to take care of if you're the 49ers. And Azeez Al-Shaair, I mean, that's a luxury addition to a team that already has Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw. And I think that's why it's long been viewed as a choice between Greenlaw and Al-Shaair. And the 49ers effectively, in my opinion, picked Dre Greenlaw when they re-signed him earlier in the 2022 season. But I mean, you never know. Some stuff can break the 49ers' way. They can get somebody back for a little bit cheaper than they expected. There could be a little bit more cap room for whatever reason than they anticipated. Al Shire's market might not be as hot as people might think it can be. And if that happens, they can bring him back. But to me, it seems less likely than it is likely at this point.
Yeah, he got some attention last year as a restricted free agent. And usually when that happens, the following year, the guy's gone. And, he was not only the strong side linebacker, a guy who started games if the 49ers were in their base defense, but he was Fred Warner's top backup, and he was Dre Greenlaw's top backup. So he's got versatility. He's got smarts. He can kind of run the show if you want to sign him as a middle linebacker. I think he's probably going to get his chance to do that. But it does mean that the 49ers were going to have to find somebody to kind of step into that third linebacker role. Oren Burks got some time as a middle linebacker. He'd probably be the first choice to replace Warner if Warner got hurt, and Warner hardly ever gets hurt. But I'm not sure that Burks has got the speed that the 49ers want to come in and play for Greenlaw at that weak side spot. Marcelino, David, this surprised me. Marcelino McCrary Ball stood out to me because he was not signed to a reserve future contract, and I can't get to the bottom of this, but he seemed like somebody who, potentially could fill that role because he's very fast, very kind of well put together, too. I was always kind of eyeing him as the next Aziz. And that may be the case, and that's why he's not signed to one of these perfunctory reserve future contracts. But that did kind of strike me because of all those practice squad guys, Quantrez Knight jumps out, Jason Poe certainly jumps out, but the third guy I would say that kind of jumps out as somebody who could factor into the future of this team was McCrary Ball.
And he really endeared himself to the media, too, with those really, really long press conference answers. I mean, that guy just took it and ran with it. So, yeah, you're right. The reserve future deal, the way I would say it's a minimum deal, that generally means off-season deal. It is clearly signifying that the team doesn't expect you to make the 53-man roster. You have a chance, obviously, to move up the pecking order. All of the youngsters on the practice squad, with the exception of McCrary Ball, got a reserve future deal. So, it made me wonder, do they not want this guy in the building anymore? Or are they going to sign him to something more proper this next season? So we'll see what happens, because the thought process was the 49ers brought in a couple of undrafted free agent linebackers, right? Three of them last year. They brought in Jeremiah Gemmel out of North Carolina, Sagun Olubi, who was Drake Jackson's high school teammate who ended up going to San Diego State, and Marcelino McCrary Ball. And the only one who survived past training camp was McCrary Ball. So we figured, okay, the 49ers' plan to succeed Aziz Alshire was going to be McCrary Ball. But it could be that, or maybe they pivoted on Alshire and they believe that they have enough money to keep him now based on some other permutation in the salary cap. So they're like, okay, McCrary Ball, we'll let him go for now. Even in that case, though, I would think that they would keep him on a reserve future deal for another practice squad year, right? So I think it's just best to wait and see what happens, to let it fully develop. Because, again, they only have 46 players under contract right now. They have room for 90 on this offseason roster. So there's 44 signings to go. Some of those are going to be draft picks. But there's still plenty of, guys who will be re-upped who haven't been re-upped yet. And I think it's probably smarter for us just to sit back and wait and see what they do.
Yeah, I agree. 44 spots. That's a lot. That's a lot. So there's going to be many, many transactions between now and whenever the first OTA is. It's usually in early May. And then David and I will probably talk to you again right around the time of the combine, which is late February. We'll be able to talk about Brock Purdy's surgery at that point. John Lynch will have spoken at the combine, and he should have some news. And We ought to have more to say about some of these impending free agents that we've been discussing the last half hour or so. But for now, that's it. And we will talk to you later this month.
All right. Take care, everybody.